Welcome back to another episode of Cal Show Unplugged. We're going to briefly go over the league matches before we jump into the big stories. Danielle, your Inter has been not great lately. Get back on track with a big victory. Lautaro Martinez hat trick. How are you feeling after that one?
About fucking time, because seriously, I was going to break some shit if we didn't even win more than one goal. I mean, thank God that the drought is over. Obviously, there were a couple, three times throughout the match where Martinez was able to get that wonderful, and I mean wonderful, hat trick. Then you also have Edin Dzeko, and I'm referring to himself. Get two goals as well. I mean, overall, this was a great performance to get back into the driver's seat, especially with the other game. So, that being said, I am very well happy with that performance.
Yeah, it felt like kind of one that you needed to get. Things had not been going well, had not been playing well, kind of struggling. Lately, not getting the points that they need, slipping out of that sort of we're in charge of this title race, at least temporarily. That's what it kind of felt like and looked like. Martinez comes up big, gets a hat trick here. Of course, he's one of the players that has been kind of on the wrong side of that lately, but it's good that he got back and moving. With a big victory, you win by five goals, which, you know, anything less than three would have been even a little concerning, all things considered. Inter back in second, I think one point out of the top with the game in hand. Do you think – I know we talked to Lynx last week about the title race and who was in charge of it. Considering the help, do you think it's kind of switched over again?
I mean, I think it's switched over just a little bit, but right now I still see Napoli has the favorites at this point, but maybe that'll change once I see a little bit more consistency back in the league, but right now I still think it could be a possibility that things turn around back into Inter's favor.
You don't think the fact that Napoli lost a big game on the weekend kind of changes, flips? This might change every week, but at least considering that they lost a big game that I don't think many expected them to lose, considering kind of the form of their opponent. You don't think that kind of puts you back I know it's bottom of the table. But you hadn't won a game in a while. You kind of been in no man's land after losing the Derby, and then the Coppa Italia was not a good performance. Liverpool game wasn't a good performance. So Swallow wasn't a good performance. Napoli wasn't a good performance. So you had all this negative results, and now you finally get yourself back into that space. Napoli loses, which helps you. I don't know. So I feel like kind of you're in this space where the title race is going to change every week. But the fact that Napoli just lost and they had what we've been saying all year is, you know, they're not playing well, but they're still winning games, and so on and so forth. But Napoli are unable to get the victory. You get the victory, so you kind of jump them. Still sitting behind Milan, but only because of the game in hand that you have. Kind of continuing to sort of play well. Do you think it's just the fact that you're playing a bad team, or did you see difference in as far as how the team performed from the previous week?
Give me a minute to think about this question.
Yeah, no problem. Take your time. Because obviously you won the game, but I'm talking like internally on the field, because you could. Let's be honest. You can sleepwalk and beat them, Salentina. We know they're going down. We know they're going to be relegated. But did you see any difference in terms of like the kind of the things that you've been lacking the last few weeks, because you can sleepwalk, like I said, with all the respect to that against them, and you're going to be fine. So did you see anything that distinctly stuck out in your mind, or see any sense of improvement from, you know, the previous week to the big win on the weekend?
I would say that there was some slight improvements. I mean, Martinez and Dzeko hadn't scored in quite a while. But yet again, it was Salernitana. Like you said, anybody could sleepwalk through him. I mean, I saw a little bit more of aggressiveness that hasn't been seen. Obviously, we had the much stronger team from top to bottom, and we were able to cut through them like butter, and we were faster paced than they were. But I mean, again, it is Salernitana, so there may have been some slight improvement, but I mean, it is Salernitana nonetheless. So I really couldn't say, like I said, if I see more consistency, especially up against like mid to top table teams in the coming weeks, then I'll know if this wasn't like a fluke and we're finally saying we're back. But like I said, we need a challenge to prove that this wasn't like a fluke, because like you said, you could cut through them like butter without any issues, even if you were like say a mid-table team or something. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I agreed. It's not a huge sample size, just because they're at the bottom of the table, you're near the top of the table. But you know, those were points you absolutely needed. Unfortunately, if you know, things had gone their way earlier with some other results that also gone their way, so on and so forth. All right. Speaking of your title buddies, big clash between second and third. Milan dropped 2 points, dropped 2 games in a row against, Udinese and Salernitana. Napoli just comes off beating Lazio. And before that, they dropped some points as well. But they're for the most part, Napoli was picking up the points. I think they were on form. They had the best form among the top four or five sides, and they get the job done there. But then Olivier Giroud again saving himself for the big moments, comes up in a big way, gets the one and only goal. And so on and so forth, and they get the points. Napoli get brought down to earth, kind of. And what were your thoughts on the top three and four going head to head, and what do you make of what it means?
Which match are we talking about again?
Your title buddies, Napoli and AC Milan.
I mean, Olivier Giroud. I'm just going to say it now. He's amazing, even though he's still in his he's in his 30s right now. But he still saves himself through those crucial moments, and it's shown time and time again. I mean, yeah, it's going to be, like I said, the title race this season is hot. So I'm excited to see how this pans out. And in regards to Napoli, you're right. They have – I actually double-checked, and they are the ones that had the best form going into the weekend. And then they dropped points against a team that they weren't expected to drop to. But
yeah, that's fair. It's kind of a pick 'em, though. It's Milan and Napoli. It's not Milan and Spezia, you know? So there was – yes, you could say, okay, so Napoli were favored to win that game. But it is kind of a coin flip, because those are two teams at the top of the table – do anything. So the fact that, I don't know, Napoli dropped the point despite having the best form out of the top teams, unable to get the job done, and Milan, who had been struggling, now gets points from that. What do you make of what that scenario all means for the league title race?
I mean, if Napoli are able to get back into the driver's seat next week, they should have no problems like keeping their momentum. But usually with Napoli, like we've seen in recent seasons, where they lose to one of the bigger teams and then it just domino effect and then they just lose that place. But do I think they're still out of it? No. I mean this is gonna be one of those kind of races that's gonna probably change week by week just based on these three teams who are really fighting hard. So I mean overall how I see it going, I still see Inter right now as the favorite, followed by possibly...
I don't know, followed by who. That's hard, you know?
Yeah, that's the hard thing.
Because
yeah,
okay, AC Milan dropped to these two teams. They haven't been playing well, but then they get this big win. And then Napoli, who've been playing great, then get this big loss. Well, not big in terms of scoreline, but big in terms of who they lost to. So just like, okay, one of you two are punking us. Which one is it? You know what I mean? Because
hey, God, I gotta do it. I have to do the. I gotta do an insert humor thing. I have to. But hey, yo, guys, welcome to another edition of Who's Punking You by Daniel Erson.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, though. It's just like, all right, we know. The thing is, Inter. I don't think that's possible for Inter to fall out of that sort of fate. At worst, they're second favorites because their team is too strong from top to bottom. They got more quality than both of these teams. But then on the other, so I don't think Inter can fall out of it completely. I do think, and again, we're deep into the season now. It goes so fast, but we're into the depth of the season now, where. The fact is, these three are probably going to be at the top until the end. But I still think there's a scenario where either AC Milan or Napoli dwindle out and it becomes a two-team race, at least for the next, I don't know, whatever, 5 to 6 weeks. The question I have is not for you, but in general, is who's going to be – are they both going to be able to kind of handle the situation appropriately where – obviously, AC Milan wants to keep it going. You have them another time, or have you played them twice already in the league?
Who?
AC Milan.
Yeah, we already faced them twice in the league.
Okay, so they faced you twice in the league. They faced Napoli twice in the league. They faced Roma twice in the league. So if you look at the teams, sort of the tough teams, I think Atlanta is the only one they've only played once. We're Napoli.
Actually, wait.
I think.
No, we haven't faced Napoli on the reverse fixture yet.
No, but you faced Milan, right?
Yes, at least Milan, yeah.
Okay, so this is my point. So, but Napoli has to face Roma again, has to face Inter again, and then I think they have to play Juventus again. I don't know off the top of my head. But the point is, the momentum kind of looks like it's with AC Milan just because the strength of schedule down the stretch is easier. But on the other hand, they did drop to Spezia and Salernitana. But on the flip side, Napoli, who may have a slightly more difficult road to end the season, well, they do have to play Roma and they have to play Atlanta. And then I think there's a few others they have to play. But for the most part of this season, they've done well in the big games. They beat Juventus, they beat Lazio, and I think there's a few others they've beaten as well. Fiorentina, if you want to put them in there as well, who I think they have to play again. So I don't know. I just feel like it's unclear what's going to happen here. I think Inter will finish second at worst, but I think deep down most people feel like they're still going to win it. Which is why a lot of pressure is going to be on next season because Juventus will come to life again and AC Milan will invest and Inter will probably invest as well. So, but I don't know. I just feel like it's really strange because we don't know what's going to happen with AC Milan and Napoli, where we kind of feel Inter, if even though they don't win the league, they're probably getting second at worst. You know what I mean? What's your vibe on how this kind of veers?
I mean, how do I see it projecting?
Yeah, what's your gut? Like, okay, I think we all kind of agree that all three of these teams are going to be until the end. But what's your feeling on which of these two teams are going to take advantage of this stretch in a more, I don't know, pragmatic way? I don't know. There's no right answer. I'm just seeing what your vibe is.
I mean, obviously, I see Inter, if they keep up this momentum, they'll be the, like, number one.
But no, yeah, Inter. Other than Inter, I mean.
Second and third place. Yeah, that's still tough. I mean, you have AC Milan, who does well against lower in the table and sometimes mid-table. And then depending, it's usually hit or miss with the top of the table. But then you hit. So it's kind of hard to say with that.
Actually, real quick, I don't mean to stop you, but actually, according to stats, AC Milan have the most points against the top six.
So that changes how I was going to word this, but
I just don't want to make you say something that's that there's actually data against. But anyway, continue what you're saying.
So I mean, there's that, but then there's Napoli, who no matter what they do, they can perform terribly and still pull off the result. But I don't think that'll last much longer. So if I had to say it right now, I would say Inter in first, AC Milan in second, and then Napoli in third, because I don't think Napoli can hold on with all these terrible performances. Because eventually, if things will come crashing down if they let this mistake get them in the butt. So for now, my gut tells me Inter first, AC Milan second, Napoli third.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think Napoli's actually been playing that bad. They didn't play poorly against AC Milan, but earlier in the season, they're more so than now. But I feel like the impact of this result kind of goes into Milan's direction more, especially because they've already gotten the big results. Big games out of the way. It's just a matter of them being able to coast against the bottom of the table and middle of the table. Where Napoli, I think they have a few more tough games to go before the end. So logically, you should feel AC Milan are going to do it just because they're AC Milan and because their schedule is easier, but then Napoli could do it. And I don't know, Spalletti's been pretty good this year as far as management of that team. I would say I'm kind of leaning with AC Milan for a while just because of that. But it's, again, it's impossible. I think it's going to be really close until the end. And that's why your game in hand against Bologna is going to be so important. That's like you just can't fuck that up. You know what I mean? Because you don't know how vital and important that will be. And we don't know – I don't know off the top of my head when that game is. But whenever that is, they have to be prepared to sort of – because if you screw that up, you're in trouble for real. Not of not finishing in the top two, because I think they'll do that anyways, but more like finishing outside of the top spot because you want to repeat as champions until the hurricane comes down next year when everyone gets stronger.
By the way, I have an update on that, the match in hand.
When do you play them?
I'm finding out from a couple different sources that match has yet to still be scheduled, which I'm surprised. So
yeah,
who knows?
All I'll say about that is it better not be at the end of the season because I don't think you can do that. It has to be before the end of the season. It can't be the season's over and then Inter gets to play this game in hand. I think that'd be stupid because then AC Milan could like, oh, we won the league. Wait, we didn't. We have to wait a game after the league is over to see if Inter won their game in hand. And you know what I mean? It's I mean, as much as that scenario would be humorous, I think they have to do it. They got to do it soon because we're in like what match day 28, 29. So there's about less than 10 to go. So because of this, I think they have to schedule it soon. And now that you're no longer in the Champions League, they can just throw it in a midweek after that. But we'll get into that game in a second. Let's just quickly go over this one. Roma beats Atalanta. Do a double over them. We hadn't beaten them since 2017, before our victory at the Bergamo. You know, we handled the situation well. Tammy Abraham scores again. That's 20 goals this season for him in all competitions. It's not Alonso played poorly. Roma took advantage of the opportunities. They handled themselves well. Alonso just wasn't optimistic enough with their chances. And you know, I've been saying for a couple of weeks that the next three or four games for Roma is going to define the entire season. And now they get this big win against Alonso at home. 3 points. Roma currently are in the Europa League spot where we want to be. We're actually level on points with Atalanta, who are in fifth. So we both have the same. If Atalanta loses their game in hand, then Roma could take fifth. So it's a huge deal for Roma because they can go up and get a top five spot that seemed impossible like 3 weeks ago. And on the flip side, Juventus win a tight one against Spezia. They get a 1-0 win there, which means the possibility of Atalanta chasing down Champions League again, I think is I wouldn't say it's over, but I think it took a huge dent in that possibility of getting Champions League again. Obviously, there's still a an opportunity for them to win the Europa League. They won 3-2 today, but they're going back to Germany. And if Schick is back, it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one anyway with Diaby and my boy Florian Wirtz, who's an absolute boss today. There still is an opportunity for them to make the Champions League through a route through the Europa League, but it's going to be difficult. But I think, in all honesty, Atalanta not being able to capitalize and winning a game against Roma could detach and derail Champions League possibilities. And obviously Roma possibly getting a top five Abraham score. Everyone playing pretty well. What are your thoughts on the impact? Not the game itself necessarily, but what do you think, what is your vibe on the impact of both sides following the victory on Saturday?
I mean, with Atalanta, you played Atalanta, right?
Yep, we did.
I mean, that's huge in regards to Roma in the possibility of getting a Champions League spot or finishing in the top five, which has been a struggle for as of recent seasons. But then you have Atalanta, who were doing really well getting into Champions League positioning for over the past few seasons. But then, I don't know what's going on. They just started to fizzle out. And I mean, I don't know if their trajectory keeps on this course, it's going to detach themselves from that conversation.
So do you think that the route to the Champions League has to come through Europe, or do you think there's still an opportunity for them to close with Juventus? I think I don't know off the top of my head, I think it's 5 points.
I mean, they would have to work really hard to close that gap because Juventus, I mean, has really stepped it up a notch.
They do have a game in hand as well, still.
And then, I mean, so they've been performing fairly consistently, whereas Atalanta have been having hit and miss performances over the past few weeks. So I would say it would have to come through Europe.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of see that, but there's still a possibility, a game in hand. As far as for Roma, obviously game this week, and then derby the week after. They're at level with five. They're at level with Atalanta, so they're the same points. Atalanta's a game in hand. Again, now if it goes the other way where Atalanta loses, then Roma are right there with Atalanta and just need to keep pace. But on the other side, you know, as we talk about every season, what is the objective of the season? First things first, finish ahead of those bastards down the road. That's the first thing that you look at as a Roma fan and as Roma's expectations. That's what it is. First things first, finish ahead of Lazio. Because if we have a horrible season and they're behind us, they've had a horrible season too. And then second, what is our actual expectation for the season? They're 1 point ahead. They got Lazio play this week. Roma play this week. If Roma win and Lazio win, it will be 1 point between themselves and Lazio. And if Roma then win the Derby, it will be a 4 point thing. So on the other side, do you think a Derby win? Let's just for the sake of argument say it's 1 point between the two teams going into not this week but next week. Do you think a Derby victor, whoever wins the Derby, will finish ahead? And do you think that having that happen for Roma would almost more or less guarantee themselves into Europa League football?
I would say it would definitely be one of those scenarios where I think that could actually happen. I mean, there are times where it looks like their Jose Mourinho has made some. I mean, he's not the man for the job. That's already been made clear.
Yeah.
But I mean, he does have moments of brilliance. So if he's able to work his magic and help you guys win the Derby and really focus in on what works and what hasn't worked this season, and just utilize what works and adapt as needed, I think a win in the Derby would definitely set that trajectory on course.
Yeah, and that'd be huge because it's been what, 3 years? It was. I think it was 11 years in a row that Roma finished ahead of Lazio. And then it was 3 years in a row the other way. So ending that is good. But, you know, I don't think it's game over the other way. I think if Roma win, it's too demoralizing for Lazio to bounce back from that and kind of go on with that and try to sort of do it, because they've been ahead of Roma in the league almost all season. And now they caught up. And now Lazio, you know, if they lose, it'll be 4 points. You know, granted, everything stays the same in the table. But if Roma do end up falling short, there is another path for them to make the Europa League, where Lazio's path was ended by Porto. So it's basically Lazio needs to win this. I think whoever wins this game, if both teams win this weekend, I think whoever wins the Derby will be the ones to make the Europa League. My brain just went somewhere else. I almost said to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. This is back in the
Welcome to the ADHD brain.
I know, it's just that I'm just walking around my house and I saw an NFL thing, and it just my just brain went there. Anyway, okay. Juventus win. Close to 1-0. Calgary, Lazio, but it's Calgary. The rest, I think, not too important. The battle on the table, there's been some stuff, but nothing crucial, nothing like super important at the moment. You know, let's get this out of the way. What's not super important at the moment is Man City. Sporting 0-0, didn't matter. We knew Man City was going through.
So congratulations.
You know, congratulations. Hope you get by and get slapped up.
Shit. That was savage.
I'm sorry. It's just this, because all the hatred or this thing about Bayern Munich couldn't handle the Premier League, it mostly comes from Man City fans. So I would love nothing more than Bayern Munich to get Man City and take them down. I think that'd be a beautiful, beautiful. And, you know, as we have noticed, Robert Lewandowski isn't injured. If he doesn't get injured, I don't think anyone's taking them down other than maybe Real Madrid. All right. So that's that. We don't have to talk about this a lot, but speaking of Bayern, they just kind of did their thing. And we talked about this the other week that, you know, it was going to be very difficult for Salzburg to handle themselves in Munich, even with how well they played in Austria. But, you know, we thought that they would put up a fight. All I can say is they tried to. It wasn't like they intended to lose in the way they did. Bayern Munich handle themselves. Poor decisions defensively from Austria, from the Austrian side. I mean, giving away two penalties like that, that just puts you in a hole. It's 1-1, then it becomes 2-1, 3-1. And now you have to overcome a 3-1 lead. Coming back from two goals in a game like this is really tough, unless you're Karim Benzema. But we'll get onto that in a minute. But they just ran away with it. They looked strong. They look imposing. You could say, oh, it wasn't the strongest opponent, but it's an opponent that played well against them in the first leg. They cruised to victory with a 7-1 thrashing, Bayern into the quarterfinals. And I think it depends on how everything is, the seeding of the next couple games in the Champions League. But I think, you know, once you put a more difficult team in front of them and they get past that, I just think they have a roadmap to the Champions League, regardless. Because PSG's gone, Inter's gone. So there are teams in this sort of situation that could have affected. I don't know. I just think, and I'm not making a huge deal about this, but I just think at full strength, if they play like that against a more difficult team, they're going to be tough to beat. You don't have to say a lot, but what are your thoughts on Bayern throwing down the house?
By the way, did you see the final score on aggregate? I'm like, yeah. I'm not sure if aggregate or the Barcelona Bayern score.
Yeah, but that's not like, okay. So that, yes, in theory, yes, you know, it was a very similar score to the Bayern Barcelona thing, but it's not the second game ever to be 7-1. I can think of 4 7-1s in the Champions League at the top of my head without even thinking about it. So let's put it this way: it's a collection. It gets thrown into the collection of Barcelona Bayern like games, but there's Porto Bayern 7-1, there's Bayern Roma 7-1, there's Manchester United Roma 7-1, there's Manchester United Roma A2, so on and so on. In the Champions League and in Europe, there's been a lot of games that have been very, 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 very one-sided. PSG Celtic 7-1, PSG Celtic second leg 8-1. So there's a lot of games like that, but this certainly adds to the collection of humiliation in the Champions League. Although I don't know if they're going to feel like horrible about it, because they did do well in the first leg. The second leg was just inevitable, I felt like.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, there really wasn't a lot of takeaways from this match, except when you go to Bayern, you better say your prayers, because you're going to get annihilated.
Right. So what does that tell you? You need to handle yourselves. If you have the first leg in your house, keep them at arm's length, because if you – again, it's not probably going to be like that again, but – if Bayern are healthy and when Neuer comes back, even if you put a challenging team in that circumstance, it's probably not going to be like that, but it's just going to be difficult to do. But there are other places, obviously. There's other teams that have hostile grounds as well. So it'll be interesting, but Bayern just crushed. Anything to add other than the fact that Bayern just crushed? It's pretty.
No, not really.
Cut open and slam shut. All right. So your Champions League season came to an end. At Liverpool, although Lautaro scores again, beautiful goal. They beat Liverpool at Anfield, kept everyone in check for the most part, even though it was a good game. It's never nice to get knocked out. What are your thoughts on the Anfield experience and how do you feel like Inter played in that game and over the two legs?
I feel like crying right now, but I'm going to hold it together for the sake of this show. Obviously I was heartbroken that our Champions League run had come to a close, but I'm going to say it. boys, I am proud of you for making it into the round of 16, which hasn't been seen in quite some time. So for that, great job. In this match, they definitely performed like they were trying to come back. And there's this, I think the win on Saturday kind of helped set the trajectory for this match. I mean, you had Lautaro Martinez getting that beautiful goal from outside the box. And then you saw them try to fight tooth and nail at every counterattack to try to at least get that second goal. But unfortunately, it was at times where Liverpool was basically playing a game of keep away with the ball in certain spots, so it was really hard to get to the ball at during those scenarios. But, I mean, they tried to fight to get the ball, so at least they were trying to show that, hey, we're not going down without a fight. And I'm going to say it, breaking the Anfield curse is also another huge accomplishment, so good job. And, yes, it's not how we wanted things to end, but I mean, yes, it sucks we were eliminated, but at least we tried to fight to the end, which shows that this team is one of those teams that, yeah, we'll fight to the end, even though we played terribly in the first match. I'm just saying. But I mean, if we had showed that intensity in our match at the San Siro, I think this would have definitely gone in another direction, but it is what it is. But I'm so happy that we were able to at least come back with the goal and stuff, but it is what it is.
By the way, there's no way that was a red card. The Alex Sanchez thing.
That was bullshit.
That was bullshit. Like, let's not mess around here. It's interesting. Anfield is an intimidating atmosphere, and sometimes it forces the referees inadvertently to making bad decisions. When we had played them there in the first leg of the Champions League semifinal of the year, Roma made the semis. It was appalling. Actually, in both games, actually there were their refereeing decisions. There was Trent Alexander, a blatant handball in the box. Like there was a picture of the ball on his hand, like he was trying to catch it. Wasn't called as a penalty. Jacko's taken out of the box. Wasn't called as a penalty. Mohamed Salah's goal. One of his goals was he was in an offside position before the goal, among other things. It was a really horrible thing because the scoreline didn't like. Again, Liverpool, when we played them, they deserved to go through. We did not deserve to go to the final. We would have lost to Real Madrid. But all things considered, if you look at that Champions League matchup, there were a lot of questionable decisions. So the Alexis Sanchez thing was bullshit, and it came – again, I'm not saying that Liverpool would have lost, but it came at a time in the game where Inter still had – they still had some – they had opportunities to go and win the game. And now having to do with that 10 men has to be difficult. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that whole situation?
I'm trying to go back into my memory banks to see if he was yellow carded in the first half or something. That
no, it wasn't. I'm pretty sure it was a straight red. It looked to me like he played the ball. And then Fabinho just got cleated at the end inadvertently. But he makes contact.
That was the thing. Yeah, it was like your body is going to continue to slide with your cleats up regardless. And the ball was clearly away from him. So it was like there was no intention of harming him.
So, correct me if I'm wrong. He caught it in the air, right? It was like a sliding touch.
Yeah.
And then he ends up stepping on his foot, but it's not like he meant to do that. It's clear that he connects with the ball before anything else happens, and it just sort of, you know, it happens the way it happens. But he touched the ball first. Once you make contact with the ball, what happens behind that or after that is not relevant. Now, if you're trying to go for the ball and you are striking with your cleats up with the intention of trying to get someone, that's one thing. He literally caught it in the air. There was about there was a few feet of space between himself and Fabinho when it happened. He makes contact with the ball. He gets contact. The ball goes upwards, and he just ends up stepping on his foot. But it's not like he meant to do that. I don't know. I just thought it was ridiculous. And you know what? If he doesn't get sent off, Liverpool probably still go through. So I'm not saying controversy. Let's protest. But I mean, it's just a stupid. It's really dumb. That's such a bullshit call.
Yeah. And yeah, so I'm sitting here doing the double middle fingers for that because that was some garbage right there. I mean, come on. I mean, yeah. But I, if anything, I would have said a caution just to be safe. But I mean, the red card was completely bogus.
Yeah, I don't think he should have even been booked because when I looked at him, like, there's nothing wrong with this play. He's not doing anything aggressive. He doesn't have malicious intent. His intent is to make connection with the ball, which he did slightly, and then he just ends up – it's an unfortunate position. And, again, Fabinho felt it. You could see that he felt it. But it's not like he meant to do that. And so I feel bad that Fabinho got the you know, got the reaction at the end of it. But, I mean, come on. He makes contact with the ball. There are ones that are like 50-50. But I don't know. Maybe that's just the atmosphere of Anfield. It just drives referees to make poor decisions. So that's a tough one to take. Before we move on, obviously it's amazing to get win at Anfield. We've done it. Although our Anfield victory was we haven't. That was at the Olympic. But never mind. But Atletico's done it. There's been other teams that Dortmund's done it. There's been a lot of teams that have been able to do it. It's still a difficult place to play. Now, if you're asking me, would I rather play at Anfield or at Red Star? I play at Anfield 10 times over. And there's other grounds around football that are bad. But in English football, that's the toughest one. I don't think there's another crowd in English football that in world football even. It's a very tough place to play. So maybe that's why, you know. Silly decisions like that go in their favor, but in the end, it didn't deserve to go through. But it's a great win at Anfield. But so I just want to go back to the first leg just for a second. So, based off the performance and based on the goals conceded in that game, why do you think you lost it? Because obviously, I think your situation was lost. That this tie was lost at the end of the last game. Why do you think it happened, and what should have been done to avoid the situation?
Well, the things that I noticed directly from the first time we played them versus this time around was the fact that there was a lot more aggression. In the first match, we looked sluggish, slow. There wasn't really anybody, like, taking charge. And there was, and obviously we had been on a bad string of form for a while. So it could have been also mentality reasons too. But I think with the win and over the weekend kind of helped them get the victory here a lot. But in the first leg, if we had played with that same aggression and trying to do like get the keep the ball at all costs and really focus on capitalizing on our scoring opportunities, I think this would have definitely went in a whole another direction. But defensive-wise, I saw a little bit more cohesiveness in the back three, which wasn't seen at times in the first leg. So, I mean, if we took some of that, what we didn't do in the first leg and actually applied it from if we took what we did in the second leg and applied it into the first leg and stuff, I think it would have been a different picture.
Is there, when you think of the first leg, and I don't mean to try to bring this up, but is there a moment, like a particular moment that sticks out in your mind of like I've watched games with Roma in the Champions League and Europa League and other things, and think to myself, that's that moment right there is why we're going to get knocked out. Was there a moment like that for you where you saw something, a particular scenario where you kind of had that, you know, look like, uh-oh, we're in trouble now.
I think it was the first goal from Liverpool that kind of started it, because once Liverpool have that goal lead, they just start running with it, and they will do what it takes to get that second goal to give that two-goal cushion, and it showed. And so eventually, once they got the first goal, they ended up, I guess, getting a little bit more, even more reserved, if that makes sense. So if they had defended way better in that match, I think it would have been different.
So for me, obviously, I think the first goal is bad, but I think the fact that you conceded the second one in the way you conceded, which was horrible, I think that one was like, oh, shit, we're in trouble here, aren't we? But equally, there was another moment in the first half of that game. And sometimes games are defined by inches. And Hakan Çalhanoğlu, you probably don't know better than me, but it was either Çalhanoğlu or it was Perisic. I don't remember which one. But one of them cut from the left wing right inside the box and clipped it behind Allison's head, and it hit the bar instead of going in. Who was that? Was that Perisic or Çalhanoğlu? I really don't remember. It was one of those two. That's all I know.
What, that happened, what, 2 weeks ago? Yeah, I can't remember either because me and my ADHD ass, but I think if I remember correctly, it was Kalanhu.
I think it was too, but I'm not certain. At least they both have the same position.
We'll all on the next episode who actually was.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Because my thing is, if that ball is an inch below where it is, it's 1-0 Inter. Now, do I think Liverpool go on to respond to that and score in that game? Yes. But this is just my opinion. I'm not making excuses for Liverpool deserve to go through. I think we'll both agree with that. But had that gone in, I think Liverpool go into the second leg with a 1-1 game. I think the second leg changes, though, because I think they would operated out of more desperation. Inter would probably play the game the way they play tonight. We're trying to push through, but so I don't think it changes the result of the two of over the two legs. But personally, I think if that goes in, I think it changes the circumstances of the game, of both games. But I do think Liverpool would have gone through regardless. Anyway, so bye bye Champions League. There's still one Italian team left with the hopes of qualifying or going deep in the competition. You upgrade next year, you get a more refined squad. I think you can be right back here again. I think you just got a really unlucky draw. You could have had Lille or Salzburg and you end up with Liverpool. Here's the funny part.
My boyfriend, who was doing like the like draws between and stuff, originally he says, yeah, I see you guys drawing Liverpool. Well, the first time we got Man United, but something ended up going wrong with the like,
oh yeah, I remember that stuff. Yeah,
so then they drew again, and then we ended up getting, as my boyfriend said, Liverpool. So, sweetheart, I love you, but right now I also hate you.
Yeah, because what happened was they had put because you know how they're like delivered in pots. So based on domestic success and stuff, you get entered in pots of stuff, and based on first, second place, all that stuff, you get entered differently. So what I think they did is they had put there was a team that had finished first or second in the wrong thing. So when they drew it, the whole thing messed up, because now you had all these different situations that aren't allowed to happen because of the nature is if you finish first in your group, you do not play a first place team. Where you finish second, you had to play, and vice versa. So that's what happened. And it was like PSG against There was Ronaldo, Messi. That was one of the things. And then there was obviously there were some other ones in there, but regardless. All right. Now, Inter, you know, it's been 3-4 years and this is the first time you got out of the group. I'm actually not insulting you. You'll see exactly why in a second. But let's talk about the real bottle jobs in Champions League football. Real Madrid, PSG, a team built, a team with superstars all over. Donnarumma, oh, he's the best goalkeeper in the world. All the people who were hating on me for saying it was a ridiculous top 10 for the Ballon d'Or, been quite quiet since. Amazing game. The best Champions League game of the year so far, as far as I'm concerned. Real Madrid and PSG. PSG, your Champions League winner, down and dusted with 15 minutes left. It looked like they were heading right to the quarterfinals, and then Benzema happens and so many different things. But this was such an incredible game. The experience of Real Madrid against the super team assembled with PSG. I have my thoughts on it, but what are your thoughts on the whole thing? Because I think this was an incredible game.
Yeah, definitely. There's three things guaranteed in life: death, taxes, and Benzema coming through in the clutch. And then again, it just showed right here. Yeah, I mean, very well done by Real Madrid getting back into it and holding off PSG. Obviously, Mbappe and company did what was needed in the first leg, but they just took the whole.
And they scored. He scored again in the second leg. It was 2-0, meaning Real Madrid had to score twice just to get it to tie. Just to get it to go into extra time. So offensively, they did okay because they had a 2-0 lead in this tie, and then it all went wrong.
Yeah. You want to know what they call it? They call it the fuckinging. It's like when your match or day is going so well, but then something bad happens, and then you're there. You go, there it is. The fuckinging.
And it was a great goal too by Mbappe. Scored at the end of the last one, scored in this one. They're up 2-0. They're like, oh, PSG aren't choke artists. You know, this might actually have a team that can go far in this competition. Go ahead.
But I think a lot of it also stemmed down to them kind of like after they got, oh, we got a 2-goal lead, we're good. But then they kind of like went quiet after that a little bit in the aggression department. And you do not want to do that with a Real Madrid team who has Karim Benzema, Modric, and etc. And they know what it takes to get the job done in the Champions League. So, I mean, you can't go silent like that. So that, in some defensive mistakes, saw Real Madrid get back into this match and eventually secure the victory. So overall, very great performance from both these teams, but Real Madrid showed what they're made of, and they're going on to the quarterfinal.
All right. First of all, how good was Modric in midfield? The dude is 36 years old playing, the thing is, in football, this is the position he plays is one of the most difficult to play for a long time or to have longevity. You can be a striker until you're 42 years old because people are constantly giving you the ball. It's difficult, obviously. It's difficult to defend for that long. But all you got to, you know, you really just have to, you know, be able to have good awareness and things like that. Modric's position, he's 36, 37 years old, and he is a motor. He runs constantly and has logged so many minutes and has won the Champions League 3-4 times. This guy at 36, 37 years old absolutely bossed the midfield and was incredible, along with Cruz, along with so many other pieces. But that, I mean, at first of all, that was incredible. Secondly, great opening goal by Mbappe. Just, you know, this is pretty soon we'll be living in his world. I mean, we're almost to that point now. Let's be honest. Messi's not the same. Ronaldo's not the same. Regardless of goals, assists, whatever, you want to count numbers, do your thing. But neither two of these guys are a top five player anymore. I think there might be still some hope with Messi because he's coming to a different league, but it doesn't excuse his performances haven't been good enough, et cetera, you know. Everything's going for PSG until Donnarumma does what I want to be kind. What Donnarumma did was idiotic and stupid, because from that position, what he did allowed Real Madrid to basically get a free goal. And I'm sure you remember from the Ballon d'Or thing, where me and our Calcio friends were arguing about whether or not Donnarumma should be the starting goalkeeper at PSG, right? Do you remember this? When this was kicking off, because there was debate about it, I said, I listed like four or five goalkeepers that were better than them. They said that Donnarumma was the best in the world. They said he was the best player in the tournament. I said, that's not true. You know, classic just back and forth stuff. Donnarumma gets to start probably the biggest game of his whole career. You have a guy on the bench, Keylor Navas, who's, I don't know, won the Champions League three times, who, I don't know, used to play for Real Madrid, who, I don't know, is still a better goalkeeper than Donnarumma. And Donnarumma makes that big of a mistake to allow them back into the game. And it's so erratic. And it's not all Donnarumma. This game was on all of them. Donnarumma, sort of his big move from AC Milan, was great in the Euros, came to PSG and has had moments of greatness with them as well. But when you get the star in this game, you have to realize who they're playing you instead of. They're playing you instead of a serial winner, someone that's won the Champions League multiple times, who, he just knows how to win these competitions. He saved PSG. It's against Bayern last season, just an absolute winner of a player. Then Donnarumma starts and gives it away. Not immediately, but they get back into it. And then Real Madrid keep building it up. And then Karim Benzema, there again, scores another one. And Benzema is the second best player in the world after Robert Lewandowski. Both of those two, I think, with Salah as well, those above the rest. I still think Robert Lewandowski is a little bit on a different level than everybody else. And I think there's a little space between Benzema and Salah as well. But those are the three in the world that I think are the top, right? But after the second goal, I don't know. I counted. I think 17 seconds, it was like immediately. It's like the PSG defense was doing the mannequin challenge where they just didn't do anything. And then they score again.
Oh, my gosh. That's something I haven't heard in a while.
You know what I'm talking about, though, right? The thing where they stop. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, correct me or wrong, that's kind of what it looked like. They didn't move. They looked lethargic. They looked like they didn't know how to defend. And obviously they make mistakes. You cannot allow Real Madrid to score the equalizer and then 18 seconds have the winner in the back of the net. Defense did nothing. On the previous goal, Marquinhos tries to clear the ball out into Benzema's foot, and he scores. Like, it's just mistakes across the board. And I think if we've learned anything from this experiment, we're all victims of this at some point in time. But if just because you have Hakimi, you have Messi, you have Neymar, you have Mbappe, you have Navas, you have Donnarumma, you have Marco Verratti, you have Marquinhos. I could go through the names that PSG have. They're loaded everywhere. Just because you have all that talent doesn't mean that's going to become something. That doesn't mean you're going to be a great team. They're not a great team. They're a team with amazing individuals. They're going to win the league in France, but they always win the league in France. It just didn't work. So what does this say about the future of this team? What does it say about the future of Pochettino? There's a lot of unanswered questions, but you took a team of talent against a team of experience, a team that's, that has experience winning things, and Benzema comes up to the plate and just goes to another level. I believe he's the third all-time top scorer in Champions League history. He's the oldest player ever to get hat-trick in the Champions League. And it doesn't look like he's slowing down. He kind of looks exactly where Robert is. Robert's had six straight seasons with 40-plus goals. Benzema, not quite as good, but is always a player coming up big for Real Madrid. Without Ronaldo, he has scored unseen amount of goals, and with Ronaldo, he scored a lot of goals. So Real Madrid hunts their ticket, and again, the first leg wasn't great, but there's serious questions of in regards to PSG and the whole thing, but I don't know. Real Madrid right now, I just have this feeling that, and again, we don't know who will draw into the next round. I hope it's not Bayern, because that would ruin it, because that's what the Champions League final should be. There's still Man City, Liverpool, and all others still involved, and we'll see with Atletico, Man United, and Benfica, and Ajax, I think considering what they went through in this against PSG, the most talented team in the world, I think they have a legitimate chance of winning yet another Champions League. They have enough. They have enough to if you just add up all the teams in the world and put it together, they have almost more. So I think they have 13 or 14 Champions Leagues. But I think they have an opportunity to build on that and kind of get themselves another one. Anyway, what are your final thoughts on Real Madrid making the quarterfinals?
Definitely well deserved, and this is a team that you do not want to sleep on. We'll see what happens, who they draw. There's a lot of other teams out there that, such as Liverpool, Man City, and then of course you have the Man United and all those other ones that still have yet to play. So we'll see what happens, but they're definitely one of those teams do not fall asleep on.
The crazy thing is, it's a good possibility that Mbappe is playing for Real Madrid.
That's the funny part.
The number two. I don't know. I have been on this for a while, but I think Mbappe is going to Real Madrid. I think Haaland is going to Barcelona. I genuinely think that because there's so much. It's already been discussed. It's already been introduced. Basically, this whole thing with Haaland and his exit, those are the two teams he's constantly thinking. Those are the two teams that's been reported the most that he is interested in. So, I think it's tailor-made for Mbappe to join Real Madrid. So, I think one will be at Barca, one will be at Real Madrid next year, and maybe Barca gets Felix as well. So, it's going to be interesting how the reaction of this fixture is going to determine a lot of different things, but obviously, yeah, this team is going to be tough to beat. I think the Champions League final will be Bayern Munich and Real Madrid if they're on the opposite side of the bracket. If they're on the same side, I think we're going to be robbed of something magnificent. Hold on a second. What was I going to ask? I have two topics I just want to run through quickly, and then we will head out. So first, Inter are currently linked with Scamacca, Raspadori. It's been common knowledge of those two. There's two other big hitters on Sassuolo with Ravizzi, who's a midfielder. Highly regarded, and Berardi, who we all know. It can be especially to Inter, or it can be just in general. Well, however you want to answer this. But of the Sassuolo talent pool, if you could pick just one, who would you pick and why? By the way, I stole this from my FTV. I just saw it on their Instagram, so I just took it and ran with it here.
No worries. If I had to pick one.
Yeah. Scamacca, Raspadori, Berardi. Let's just keep it there. And you can answer it for your personal who you'd want Inter to sign, or if you were just making calls, which one do you like the best for a whatever? You can answer however you want, but between Scamacca, Raspadori, and Berardi. Just keep in mind Berardi's 27. Scamacca is 22, and I think Raspadori is like 21 or in that range, but they all have similar statistics this season. If you want a point of reference, I think they're all in within each other in terms of stats as well. So they're very similar across the board. But anyway,
based on what I'm here, I would kind of say Scamacca, because obviously, he's way younger than Berardi, even though Berardi would provide assistance. But obviously, he's also getting older. So I would not bring him into the picture if you want somebody who's going to be there for the long term. So I would go with Scamacca. I mean, he's quick, athletic. He knows how to execute setting up scoring opportunities. He's also good at finding the back of the net. He also has defensive capabilities on top of that. So he can pretty much play. He's very versatile. So I would say sign Scamacca. That's at least who I would personally like to see. But there are a couple other people who think otherwise. But, I mean, in general, Raspadori and Scamacca pretty much have been the two names that have been going through the Inter pages like hotcakes.
Yeah, and let's be honest, you want both of them.
Yeah, I want both of them. Hashtag extra Christmas present. My birthday comes before that. So double birthday present.
So are you going to forgive them for what they did to you then? Do you remember that game?
Yeah, I do.
Hilarious. I think you know, respect IFTV. I like the question. I only follow them for topic ideas. Just because, you know, I think they're a good page. They're just not they're not my favorite thing for reasons I've explained before, but I do respect them and what they do. I think they're doing job and keep up the good work, but I basically follow them just to see what kind of ideas that they have and what kind of things they post about certain situations. But I would say that the question, so I think Berardi should have been removed from this question. I think the question really is, who do you want, Raspadori or Scamacca? Similar in age, similar stats, and I think it just depends on what you want and what your criteria is and all these different things. I think Raspadori is excellent. He's a little player, but is really special, moves really well, can find the back of the net, has been a player that has been on the cusp of breaking through it a long time. And I think this season he's finally got to that next step. Scamacca, I think, is just a little bit more of my type of player. Extremely athletic. He's agile. He's quick. Plays with just the dog mentality. I think he's a finisher. You give him service in the box and good night, Irene. I think he's just really good in front of goal. I think he's got the complete package. I think there's a lot of different things that he does well. He hasn't really hasn't exploded yet, but you're really starting to see what he's capable of. You know, I've been very impressed with him on the various loans that he's been on, and so much there. So, but you know, nothing. Raspadori is also an excellent player, and I think whoever lands these two are gonna feel good about it, because I think they're two top players. If Inter get both, I don't know how it's gonna work, but I think that would be interesting. But just because, you know, you already have Carrera, you have Martinez, that will be adding two more attackers with those two and Dzeko. So I honestly think that if you get those two Dzekos out, which I wouldn't be surprised if he's not with you next season. I think there's a chance, but I would be – I say this 50-50 shot. Maybe he goes back to Bosnia. Maybe he goes to what Ryan wants is signing for St. Louis in the MLS. They have a large Bosnian population there. So I think that's a huge possibility as well. But if you get both, I think somebody's getting sacrificed, and I think that'd be Dzeko because of his age. But it would be an unbelievable amount of options for Inter next season, and or whoever gets him. It's not Inter's been the one that's talked about it, but there's obviously other options as well for, you know, for this spot and trying to build on something, and I think it'll be interesting. All right, the last thing I want to talk about here is something that we're going to decide at the end of the season, but. I think this question in particular is difficult because I don't have a clue what the answer is. Obviously, the last few seasons, who's the player of the year? You know, it's been kind of obvious for most years. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
But more, yeah, so more or less. I think they're usually between two names. But we got to start thinking about this now because we need to formulate an answer by the end of the season. And it's difficult now because a lot of big stars have left the Serie A and things like that. But just on what you think, and you can just think out loud. You don't have to have a definitive answer, but give me your, I don't know, top four or five candidates for player of the year because I really do think it's wide open. And then I'll give you mine. Or we can go one at a time. You can do one and I can do one. Let's just do it that. Well, let's do five.
Okay. Am I in the fifth slot right now?
You don't have them either. You can just say one of my candidates would be whatever. But anyway, go on.
Hang on, you go first. I need a second.
All right. You can take some of mine, but make sure it's not the next one. Cool. Just so we're not saying the same thing. I'll go Dybala. I think Dybala has been exactly what Juventus needed this season. Again, this is very it's difficult on so many levels because of some of the other players, and it's one of those years where it's not all in one person. Last year, it was basically Lukaku, Barella, Immobile or something. I don't know. There wasn't a lot of options. This year, it could be anybody. I think Dybala's done a really nice job. One, he's been fit. One, he's been healthy. He's been spectacular. And I think for that reason, he's one of the people I'm thinking of, especially if Juventus make the Champions League and maintain themselves there. I think he's a huge reason why that is all happening. And just pay the man. But he'd be one of mine.
I'm going to actually stick on Juventus, but I'm going a different direction. I would say Matthias De Ligt. He continues to be a crucial part of the Juventus defense and really knowing what it takes to get the ball away from the opposition and set up the counterattack. And so with that being said, yo, don't interrupt me while I'm recording. Jeez. My dad was letting me know my dinner was ready. I'm like, jeez, I already know. But anyway, I thought
you were going to take back your answer.
But no, it wasn't. My dad interrupts me while I was recording. I'm like, you could have just left it on the counter. I know it's ready for crying out loud. You know what? I'll leave this in because it's funny. But anyway, he continues to prove why he's a part of that crucial defense that Juventus has.
See, this is hard. You know, crap. This is why we need to talk about this because we need to figure this out. I'm leaving the Roma ones on the table because I would like to for you to say them. So I'm gonna hold off until the end of my list. But I've been going Mobley. I mean, he's probably leading it right now, if we're being truthfully honest. His team is not great. He's currently in seventh, I believe. I think, but he's still consistent. And you know, if he had better, if there was a better system around him, and there's better teammates, and if Lazio were a better team, he'd be leading this significantly. But I think he's been incredibly consistent. He's one of the top scorers in the league. He's operating on just a really great level. But it's just, his team isn't very good. But I think he's as deserving as anyone based on his consistency again. There hasn't really been a drop-off this season, and he's kind of gone up a level this campaign, and it's been so important. Without him, I don't know where Lazio are.
I would say next would be on my list would be Tammy Abraham of Roma. I mean, the stats are speaking for themselves in this 20 goals this season. After signing, I do believe, what was it, January?
No, he signed in summer for 36 and bonuses. So he's the third, most expensive player in history. And if you want just league play, he's got 13 goals in the league, which is pretty damn good, if you ask me.
Yeah, so, I mean, he has 20 goals this season spanning across different competitions. And he's a very consistent player. There's really no question of why he's in this discussion.
All right. Think. I'm going to go with, you know what? I don't think he's going to go back to back. But if you think of Inter and the reason they're successful a lot of the time, it's because of Nicola Barella. And I know he was – I think you went Lukaku last season. I went Barella last season as far as at the end of the year. But I think Barella continues to be an absolutely dynamic player for this Milan team, Inter Milan team, that's trying to chase down another title, and I think he's so important. And I think his stats may not look his stats are pretty good, but he's someone that does everything for them, and he's someone that has a short temper, doesn't know when to stop talking, but has a certain energy about him. He just keeps moving, and has been, and when Inter are at their lowest point, he will be there to bail them out in situation. I remember last year that pass against Juventus, that was a really significant moment in the title race. So I'm going to go Barella, even though it's, again, all of these are just tough to think of right now.
Let's see. I would also – I'm going to throw out Scamacca out there. He has done a great job against not just the mid-table teams and the bottom teams, but there are times like we've seen against Inter where he shines against some of the top clubs. And so it is putting up fairly good and consistent stats. And he's a really strong young player. So I could see him going into this pot as well.
I can't believe this one slipped my mind. Rafael Leao has been phenomenal for AC Milan. He's kind of come through and is kind of showing his worth in terms of what was paid for him a few years ago. He's really just an exceptional player. That's really, we're getting to see this on a whole different scale. His team is trying to fight for the title, and he's a big reason why his explosive nature and the way he's been able to dominate games and influence games in the best possible way. I think Rafael Leao has got to be in this conversation.
I'm going to take one of the yours, because you did make a valid point. Definitely Nicola Barella has to be on this list, because you're right. Without him, there's a lot of – Inter does definitely struggle. And I think if we had Barella in our – midfield against Liverpool, it could have been a little bit different. But I mean, Liverpool, it was Liverpool, don't get me wrong, but it could have had a different shift in the momentum. He's been crucial with a lot of our, like, he's the really our main facilitator in the midfield. He alternates with for Brozovic at times, but he's young, fresh, and he knows what it takes to get that job done. Now, if he could control his temper on the other hand, that'd be great.
Yeah, I thought about this. I kind of think that I wish he had a personality like Pellegrini from Roma. Because he's a leader, but he's also somebody that can hold himself in those situations and be able to be able to calm him. You know, he's not losing. He's not flying off the handle. I mean, Barella has two red cards this year. It's not a coincidence. But maybe his aggressive nature, it's a curse and a gift. But maybe that's why he's so great. It's because he flies off the handle. So maybe even he should chill out. But at the same time, I think that's part of what makes him exceptional. Let's see. I'm just gonna do the two Roma ones. I'm gonna do Sammy Abraham. You've kind of already made the argument. And I'm gonna go Lorenzo Pellegrini. Again, the problem with Pellegrini is it's health. It's not available as much as we would like him to be. If with under a circumstance where there's no injuries, I think that he is a player that would probably be walking away with this, but because he's been injured, not been available as much, I can't. I think he's in the conversation, but he needs to be incredibly strong the rest of the season for him to have an actual chance to win it. I've said this for a long time. He is Roma's best player, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's the. You know, I think this personally, me, I think Barella, Pellegrini are the two best midfielders in the league. I think Locatelli is 1B. But I think 1A and 1A is Barella and Pellegrini. And I think the only reason Pellegrini wouldn't be again, I'm not ranking them, but the only reason he wouldn't be at the top of this list, because I think he'd be in first right now, or he'd be leading the race if it wasn't for health. When he's healthy, he's awesome. The link up with Abraham is amazing, and I think overall just been an absolute monster, and so on. Give me one more, and then we'll head out.
I would say, I know this is a weird one, but Andrea Belotti of Torino. I mean, obviously, the team he has around him is not that strong, but so he's pretty much carrying the team on his shoulders. So statistically, he's putting in the work. He definitely knows what it takes to get the job done. And I think if he had a better team around him, we would be looking at a whole different situation. But I mean, I just had to throw that name out there because to do what he does every season, especially the last few seasons where he's been carrying the team on his shoulders, that takes a lot of determination. So I'm throwing him in the mix too.
Yeah, that's weird. That's a weird one. Obviously, I appreciate what Belotti does. His numbers may not be amazing, but for the team he's around, I think that that he's a top player when he wants to be. Again, the thing with him is we always feel like we want to see more than what he gives us, just because you remember the 20 whatever it was 26 goal season he had that one year, and he hasn't quite been able to repeat it. He's got close to it. He's got 18 one, and he's got 16 the other year. He's got 4. So it's just consistency, but the quality's all there. But I think, I don't know. I think he has a coach there to take him to the next level. So I think year two with Juric and him will be great. Been great this season. Although the bulldozer has to be Torino's best player. But I think Belotti's been what he needs to be to keep Torino up, in those situations, as well. And so on. But yeah. All right. Atletico, Man United next week. Go Atletico. Benfica, Ajax next week. I actually don't care which one of you guys win, but whoever wins, I hope you go very far and win the whole damn thing. And then obviously we have Juventus and Villarreal should be great. I hope there's more defending, better defending in the second leg after the after some really erratic defensive stuff. But I think it's great. Roma women got a draw against Juventus. We're still in the title race, and so on. I just throw it in there because you got a Coppa Italia semifinal this week for the girls, hopefully Mourinho, can recreate what his assistant has been doing the last 2 weeks, because today was dreadful. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Anything to add?
No.
All right. So, goodbye.
Laters.